line, driving to the lane, crosses up Van Hoodle, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. It's the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddarher, your sports director here at WZND. And to celebrate homecoming week, we reach out to some of the biggest names, biggest alums Illinois State has to offer to join the show this week. They all declined, so instead we're joined by Joey Dwyer, our production director here at WZND.
Hey, well, how's it going? And I will say that I'm as close as you can get to being an alum while still being in school. So
I'm pretty close.
I would like to consider myself prestigious.
Yeah, you are. You definitely are.
And the voice you just heard is Joe Kennedy, our esteemed producer here on the Red Zone. And guys, it is homecoming week. It's a big week coming up here at WZND. We're going to have lots of coverage from all the games going on here. And we have a full show tonight. We're going to start off talking about some Illinois State football. And after that, we're going to take things in a different direction, hit the ice, talk about the Chicago Blackhawks season opener. David Moses is going to join the show because there's a pretty big football game happening with the Chicago Bears this week. Then we're going to round things out with a pick six. But it looks like it's going to be a great show.
It definitely is going to be, and it's nice to have things back on campus. Last weekend, quite sure that I don't even know if there's one thing that really went on besides some, I believe, tennis.
Well,
happened.
You didn't watch ESPN then and see me and Joey on the
well,
screen.
On the yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. It was an electric 1-1 overtime tie.
1-1 overtime tie, yeah.
Yeah, that. But we're here. We're talking about the wrong football. Let's get into the biggest event probably of the football season with this homecoming.
Yeah, and it's a pretty big game. Homecoming always brings an exciting energy. But this one where they're facing number 3 ranked North Dakota State, who, if you're not very well versed in FCS football, they're pretty good.
They're the best FCS team, probably program of all time. Like you can't even compare looking through the FCS and the history of everything. Like there's just nothing.
16-time national champions. They've had multiple players selected in the top 5 in the last few years. They're just a powerhouse of a program. And they are a team that Illinois State, when they played in the national title in 2014, this was the team they fell to. So there's a bit of a rivalry going on here because they've had another classic playoff game back in 2019. We consider them a rival. I don't know if they consider us.
They've won the last 10 meetings against ISU, and ISU all time has only won 2 against North Dakota State. But you also look at every team in the FCS, and they're pretty much the same thing. Like you don't beat this team.
And what kills me about that, I believe the way it went was in 2014, the Redbirds beat the Bison in the regular season and lost them in the national title. That just absolutely hurts. But so you know there's a little extra motivation there with this game. And let's dive into it here because Redbird football, we knew it wasn't going to be the best year necessarily, but now they're at a point where they've lost 3 of the last 4 games, and it seems to be a recurring trend where they start off the games really well, but then don't get that second half adjustment, and that seems to be really something they weren't expecting or doesn't normally happen with Brock Spak coached teams.
And it's a really difficult situation for the Redbirds to be in because there's not necessarily one thing that you can put this problem on because like you had 2 different quarterbacks in those games, right? Like you had Bryce Jefferson in one, Jackson Waring in the other. You had the defense kind of crumble in that first bad loss that they had against Southern where they blew that 17-0 lead at half. And then in the second half of the Missouri State game, they go into the second half down 21-20. But this is a very good Missouri State team coming in ranked. I believe they were somewhere around
16.
Thank you at the time. So they were really competitive. And then all of a sudden the offense just shut off and they couldn't do anything. Yeah.
There's instances that you just see that throughout this year, and their defense has been pretty good for what you can say what you're expecting, I would say, coming into this year. That Missouri State game, there was a couple chances where the ball kind of was in the ISU hands, and then they dropped it a couple times. Just really some unfortunate things in that, and they've been in these big games, but they've been just blowing some leads. But
so where does that come from? Is it a scheme thing or a coaching thing where you're since it's a younger team, or is it more of they're prepared for the first half, but then once things go off script in the second half, the wheels kind of come off.
I don't think it's really something that you can diagnose right now, just because there are so many different variables that we've seen through those two games that there's a reason for the collapse, but it's never the same thing. I don't think it would necessarily be Coach Spack's game plan, because if it were is working in the first half, he is a good enough coach to understand that, hey, if we got something rolling, we can continue to do it, but the other team is going to come out keen on stopping us on what we have been doing, so let's switch it up a little bit. I have faith in Brock Spack that he is not the type of guy who would just sit on his heels and try to let the good times roll, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a coaching thing. And personnel-wise, I don't think that a team that is dominant in the first half can just fall apart in the second half. It's so confounding to me that this team has been losing games like this where they've looked good. And this is not a team we expected to look good coming into this year, but they have been. And it just is – it always falls apart.
Yeah, and I think some inexperience in some certain spots. But at the offense, I really kind of thought it was going to be able to be a little bit better than last year, I would say. They brought back a lot. Definitely lost their best offensive lineman, one of the best in the whole entire FCS, and Drew Himmelman. But they brought back the other four starters, yeah. And they're ready in those trenches. And they've been having a really solid running game. So, I mean, there's been bright spots. But, I mean, just coming out in those second halves and blowing those leads, it's just – sometimes it just happens. Like, that other team, they're ranked two for a reason. They probably came into the game maybe thinking, oh, it's just going to be ISU. But, no, they come back out, and they're a ranked team, and those are some of the best teams.
And, obviously, the biggest talking point with the offense is the quarterback issue of – is it because now it appears Bryce Jefferson's healthy. Coach Spack said in his weekly press conference that it would be a game-time decision between Bryce Jefferson or Jackson Warring to start at quarterback this week. Whether that's a smokescreen because you don't want to give North Dakota State that full week to prepare, yeah. Or if he's already got that starter made up, these are two quarterbacks with two different skill sets. I mean, against Missouri State, we saw Warring pass for 318 yards, which rarely do we ever see with Jefferson, although he has made some strides in his passing game. But so Jefferson also adds the more mobile aspect, but it does seem like depending on which quarterback's in, the offense takes on a separate identity as well.
And the tough thing in this situation for Bryce Jefferson is he was a guy who has never really had that big arm, right? He's not a guy who's been a super big threat in the air, but now he's coming off of a sprained AC joint in his throwing shoulder. So that really is another issue that you have to take into consideration. This is a guy who hasn't really ever been able to take the top off the defense, and now he's coming back from a shoulder injury. It's just a big red flag. And at the Missouri State game a couple weeks ago, Jackson Warring, he looked legit. Like, he was throwing deep balls. The most impressive stat from that game for me was through his first eight passes, eight completions to eight different receivers. So he was spreading the ball. He had a couple that were 70-yard bombs down the field. He had a couple really nice checkdowns. I just really liked the way that he was able to attack that Missouri State defense, who's really good in this first half of the game. But then everything fell apart, and it's half on the game plan because they were trying to commit to the run that was just getting stuffed. But then when Warring needed to make those plays and make those throws, he couldn't do it in the second half. So it's the Birds, regardless of who they go with, it's going to be a question mark as to how well they can do.
And I think Missouri State's defense also kind of stepped up a little bit more in the second half. And this North Dakota State defense,
they're good.
They're really good. They give up just 73 rushing yards a game, and ISU averages 150. But they also have one of the best rushing game in the FCS, and they average 289 rushing yards as a team. And that's they have about four different guys who can run the ball. Quincy Patterson, they got, and this Redbird defense, they give up 161 yards a game. So I mean, it's gonna come down to that and in the trenches.
Right, and that's. I mean, especially in FCS football, if you can stop the run and pound the rock, like, you're pretty well set up. And when you have – I mean, let's talk about Quincy Patterson for a second, because this is a player that was originally at Virginia Tech, was a big quarterback recruit and transferred down a level to go to this program. And to be fair, Coach Spack does that as well, where you find some FBS players that maybe aren't able to scratch the surface and get them to go down a division and dominate. But so that's going to be tough too, because you're basically playing an FBS quarterback, a Power 5 quarterback, and there isn't much room for error defensively against him.
And Quincy Patterson's like a I don't want to say completely different because Trey Lance was a mobile type of player, but Quincy Patterson definitely doesn't have the arm that Trey Lance does. And Carson Wentz, when he was there, he wasn't really more of a mobile guy. He was on the pocket. So it is kind of cool and interesting to see North Dakota State kind of switch up a lot that they have going in their offense too.
And that just that hurts to think about, like how NDSU is so – they just attract all of these really high-caliber players. And I'd love to think – I would love to think that ISU could do the same thing.
They kind of do. I mean, Romeo McKnight came from Iowa, as you know, pretty good school. Micah Jones on the current team came from Notre Dame. They had the defensive tackle, Noah Hickox, come from Minnesota. So SPAC, I think, does have that good relationship with the Power 5 programs or with the FBS level, is known for being able to help players find that new home at the FCS level, but maybe not at that high-end way, like a great quarterback. Well, Brady Davis came from Memphis, too. That's another FBS
Shannon
quarterback.
Shannon Reed on the defense, too.
So SPAC does do that, but...
Yeah, they do get a lot of transfers, but then now... We talked about this a couple shows ago, but how all these people are transferring out, especially from the FCS now and transferring out. And like
the players he recruits out of high school leave to go to the FBS.
They're
going to
leave. So it's like they're like flip-flopping. It's almost like you're doing some trades.
Yeah.
And that's been a recurring theme for a lot of Illinois State teams. Basketball and volleyball both had some
softball.
A lot of teams are having tough losses, and it's partly due to the fact that ISU recruits really, really well in those areas. So when, you know, like Dan Muller recruits DJ Horn, and then DJ Horn's like, okay, I want to go play at a Power 5 school and not lose 23 games in a season, then he can he has the pick of the litter. So that's a problem. And you know, it hurts. You know, when do we get good teams? When do we get to keep good players, Leo?
I'm just surprised you didn't for the basketball example, go with your king, the Soren Serbian, Dusan Mihorcic, transferring to Utah.
God
rest his soul. He's not dead, but...
He's got to go experience some more Serbian weather out there
in Utah.
So,
just
I mean,
like,
the
salt
flats.
Like
home,
exactly.
Salt flats out in Utah. But it's the 100th ISU homecoming this weekend and everything. First real homecoming in 2 years, pretty much, for the hall of the campus of Illinois State. And good news is ISU is 9 of their last 11 games at homecoming day.
That last homecoming was a grind. The downpour against Indiana State. Myself and Joe Smearman were on the call for that. And because of the homecoming parade, we couldn't drive to the Hancock Stadium. So we had to walk with our equipment down there and just got poured on. It was awful.
But the
game was interesting because it was so rainy that neither team threw the ball. So obviously with James Robinson, that goes well for you. But I think my other favorite off-field homecoming story is the helmet decals. It's been something we've talked about on this show, that every home game they're going to have a different decal, and I've been a little vocal about it on Twitter that we want to see full-body Reggie back.
You're all over that,
and
Reggie,
for homecoming, they brought back the full-body Reggie. It's an awesome logo. It's got Reggie Redbird in the football spikes, football pants, carrying a football, no jersey or shoulder pads, shirtless football Reggie, but it's a great look, and I'm excited. You can't bet against the Birds when they're wearing full body Reggie.
We are, for one, a full body Reggie
we're full body
show.
Reggie
we support full body Reggie. Bring him back full time.
I want more of that. I feel like
for homecoming, they were giving out the little like stress toy full body Reggies.
Ooh.
And we have one in our office right now, and he looked mean. Like Reggie's looking
mean. It is
kind
of scary.
He's looking like a mean, lean Redbird machine.
Yeah.
And my whole thing with the current logo is when it's just the bird head, it looks kind of like an off-brand version of Louisville's logo. But like Illinois State's had such a history of very unique logos with the thumbs up Reggie, some of the script ones. I'd rather see them go back to something like that than, like I said, the Diet Louisville logo. So,
I mean, if you look at a lot of other colleges and high schools, I mean, they kind of – I feel like ISU has a different thing because there's always these colleges that are like Tigers and Wildcats. Yeah. At least Redbirds, it looks I don't think it looks that similar. There's the same colors, and I think that's really
why. Just
look
at the bird head logos.
Yeah, the bird head. Yeah. I feel like the colors are also kind of a big way for that. But we're a big Jersey and Drip podcast.
We are.
Exactly.
Show
and podcast, both. You can check us out at WZNT.com.
Yeah.
And that's all we have for the homecoming week coverage. You can check that broadcast out at 1:50 on Saturday here on WZND. And when we come back, we're going to take things to the ice, talk some Chicago Blackhawks. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Keyshawn Evans from Illinois State Men's Basketball, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone on WZND. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy, and now we're taking things in a bit of a different direction, a topic we don't get to hit too much because the Chicago Blackhawks started their season last night, and we have some thoughts. Where should we start with this, guys? A 4-2 loss to the Colorado Avalanche, but there was a lot that went on in the offseason, a lot that's going on now.
Yeah, we should probably start off probably with just that first beginning of the period, or do you want to start with the off season? Because there's a lot.
So here's how this this segment's gonna go.
Yeah,
we're gonna talk about whatever. I'm gonna say some negative things. They're gonna say I'm a hater, even though things I'm going to say are going to be intelligent.
And I'm probably
gonna
agree
right
with 95% of it.
But you're gonna be like, oh, he hates them.
You just say it in a hater way, if that makes any type
like
of sense.
Like you're right when you say them, but the way you say it makes you sound like a Blues fan.
I mean, no, that's never going to be a thing. I guess we should start off with some additions that's coming in the team, and maybe some people who left the team too as well.
Yeah, let's dive into that, because obviously the Hawks, their big move was adding Seth Jones. They added Marc-Andre Fleury, Tyler Johnson, subtracted players like Duncan Keith, Adam Boqvist. My thoughts on all this is it seems like this is maybe 2 or 3 years still too late, because you went the rebuild direction last season, and then now you're going for it. You don't acquire guys like that to just finish two spots outside the playoffs. This is a team that's trying to go for it, and it just feels like this is all a little bit too late.
I feel like it's, too late or even too early now at this point. I mean, but at this point, though, I don't even think you can say it's too late, just because Kane, Taze, they're still there. Like, what are you going to do with are you going to do with that? They're still in a competition or a place they can still be competitive.
You'll never be bad enough to be, a lottery pick team with those guys on the roster. I just think this is what they should have done summer of 2018 or 2019, when you had Kane and Taves were younger. You still had Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook with some miles in the tank. You had Brandon Saad, Corey Crawford. You should have tried to maximize those guys. I mean, when a name like Erik Karlsson was available, I know he's fallen off, but you never know if it was a different situation then, if he could have helped, or Tavares or somebody else. This just feels like the damage has already been done, and there's still a few pieces away.
And it makes sense to me why they would have done it, because the cap situation they were in, where they had some of the money to spare, and the cap stayed flat because of COVID, so they were in a more advantageous position than other teams. So they could go out and get all of these guys without a whole lot of competition. So I understand why they would have made the moves now. But no, I absolutely agree that it was the wrong timing. But now that we're here and everything has happened, it is making me kind of optimistic, because you look at the team, and there are some names. Like, the Hawks have some names, and they've got guys who can score. They've got guys who can defend. And this first game,
this first game
was an awful representation of what this team could be. That's exactly what I'm saying. Is the Hawks got matched up against the best team in the West, right out of the gate.
But it's still the same problems thing, we've been seeing for the past 3 years. They're too slow. They play the worst defensive scheme in the league, and so it doesn't matter that they have better names, but they're still making the same problems that the guys last year were making.
But I feel like you're kind of talking more about the coaching and everything. We're trying to talk, I guess, just about at least the players and what they can bring. But when it does come down to it, it is what the coaching
does.
And
you see a team like Colorado, how fast they can get up and down the ice, that they have defensemen that can jump the rush and move the puck out of their own zone. Outside of Seth Jones, the Blackhawks don't really have Gustafson. More mobile defense. Well,
that's another interesting thing.
They don't have that top-bottom speed really outside of their first two forward lines either. Yeah. They're still a slow team in the modern NHL, and even if they had a better coach, that would still be an issue they'd have. So it feels like they're a work in progress still.
And the coaching is one thing, like Joe was saying, but I think the personnel is promising enough to where you could kind of overplay expectations, especially with this coach. And we can get into Colleton in a minute, because I'm sure we all share the same opinion on that. But for the most part, this roster, I think they've got a good enough defensive depth, especially with a couple players who are going to be coming off of IR within the next couple weeks. I think Calvin DeHaan should retire from the game of hockey. But other than that, the defense looked serviceable, and the forwards were playing
Kirby Doc. He had two missed chances, but
the fact that he got those chances in the first place,
and he just seemed like the fastest, their fastest, most agile guy on the ice.
I don't know if you guys noticed that. Leo and I were watching the game together, but Kirby Doc looked bigger. Because in his rookie year, he kind of looked like, a 19-year-old kid who was 6'3", but now he's got some man strength on him.
And that was the issue why Kirby Doc maybe didn't score as much his first couple of years, because you watch how he scored when he was in juniors. He was the biggest kid on the ice and could just barrel through a bunch of guys, little boys 3 years younger than him, and plow through the net. Now in the NHL, where you're going against grown men, you can't do that, so he did need to fill up a little bit. but he still lacks maybe some of that finish, and that's something you need him to start to develop within if you want to have any chance of contending.
He just seemed like a little bit scared going in, and he got hurt with his wrist too injury. Yeah. That was a big, really big blow last year. And then, but this year I think he has really a lot to improve. I think he's going to be able to. I think he might even be the little side piece MVP outside of Patrick.
And I mean, he took that really scary looking boarding from Gabriel Landeskog, where he was crouched about 5 feet away from the boards, and Landeskog just put him in, got 2 games for it today. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Kirby Dach of 2 years ago, that would have put him out of the game and possibly some extra time, but he got right back up. I was scared to death, but Tyler Johnson came and hit Gabriel Landeskog a couple times, and
the DeBrincat hit too. That was like two of the players. My god! It seemed like those two of your best forwards are going down in the first game, but at the moment, I don't think either of them are hurt majorly. I haven't heard any reports. I think they were fine after the game in the press conference.
That's like a big thing that older Hawks fans have always said. Like, I hear dudes my dad's age who watch the games with him say, like, oh, we need bigger guys because you get what I'm saying. Like,
that's what they were saying. Yeah. If you read all of Jeremy Cullen's quotes and a lot of stuff, he said they were trying to become bigger and tougher to play against. That's not what you need in the modern NHL, and that's what I fear is the direction they're trying to take it in, where they need to be getting faster and more explosive, which they didn't necessarily do this offseason. And that's why guys like Dach and DeBrincat, so much of the season hinges on whatever steps in development they make, because they lack maybe that depth scoring or some of that speed. So the few guys you have that can bring it are that much more important.
And it's just like, it's so dumb to think like, we got to get bigger and like stronger. And like, yeah, they kind of did.
No, what was it? Look more like the Lightning or the Knights.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
it's like, that's
Colorado.
Not going to work. And like, if you looked at last night's game, like, did they even look that big? Besides, was it Stillman's hit or two hits that he had? Like, oh, Riley Stillman.
His hit that took him out of the play and allowed a rush to go down the
exactly.
ice the other
and
direction.
Then he hits his own guy, too, in the first period well. But it's just confusing. It's really confusing what Jeremy Colleton, Stan Bowman are doing. It's just... But this is a thing every Hawks fan's like, what is going on?
Last night, Colorado's the team you want to look like, and it just shows how far behind this team is, how maybe they... just need an overall personnel change to get to the point Colorado's at.
And Leo, I think that's a great transition into something we've alluded to for most of this segment is the personnel change that I think you're referring to that first and foremost needs to be changed is the man behind the bench, Jeremy Colleton.
Yeah.
And the interesting decisions that he makes scheme and personnel wise.
Yeah. And I think it seems like he's been protected for so many years. There are so many excuses he's been able to have, the pandemic year, and then last year Taves and Dach weren't there.
The year before, he's like, oh, I got to get a full year with
he needs his first training camp and all that.
Yeah.
But you go out and you acquire Seth Jones, you acquire Marc-Andre Fleury. This is a team that looks like they're trying to make the playoffs, so you can't stutter out of the gate with him. If there's a change that needs to be made, you have to make it soon, and you can't afford to miss the playoffs with this roster because they've given him everything he needs. They went and got him a starting goalie, a top pairing defenseman. They got him some questionable depth at forward, and if he can't put it together with this group, when's it going to change?
And I feel like he might not be putting it together, but this team might. From like what been hearing from training camp and at least on air in yesterday's call and everything, it seems like this team's a little bit closer than what it's been in the past three or 4 years as well. And there's a bunch of new guys on this team. It's the first game of the season. I do like how we are overreacting, though, because it's only going to make us feel happier if something good does happen.
Joe, let me tell you, I hope so much that we are sitting in the studio in, like, April, and we're playing back all this negative stuff that we're saying about the Hawks being like, oh, remember that, now they're a third seed. Remember when Colleton was still coaching the team and he got fired in November?
That's not going to happen.
No, and I know, and it sucks, and it's just a predicament that we're in right now because the Hawks refuse... the Hawks just refuse to be a bad team. Sometimes you have to be a bad team. Yeah,
it's an organization that's stuck in neutral. I mean, it's been this way for probably 4 or 5 years where you didn't really want to maximize the last few years you had with Kane and Taves and Keith and the cup core together. And then now you're not willing to fully blow that up and start fresh. It's like they've just been stuck, and this is why they're always outside the playoffs and never bad enough for that lottery pick. It's just... And there's nowhere to go from here.
Yeah, like before on these teams, they used to be they used to be kind of like a little bit of a faster team when they were younger back in the 2010s. Yeah, and then they switch it up. They're like, oh, we're actually going to – they went against the grain. It seems like 10 years ago, yeah, there was like,
they were the first team to start thinking like that, and now everybody's doing what they were doing 10 years ago.
It was completely switched and flopped around. It's like, okay, what are the Hawks trying to do? They're trying to think they're smart here or something, but – I mean, it's just Jeremy Colleton and his coaching staff thinking that's the right thing, and they are NHL coaches, I guess, though.
So it's clear that the Hawks, at least in their minds, they want to make this playoff push. Where do you guys see them finishing this season in a central division that's a little bit all over the place this year? Hawks are finally back in the central as opposed to the fake COVID division. So it's just, where do you guys see the finishing? Do you think maybe they sneak in?
I think they could. I think it's going to Colorado, Winnipeg, Minnesota, Dallas, then Chicago.
St. Louis is better than the Hawks, I think, too.
Well, yeah, but you don't know that.
I mean, their roster is a lot better than the Hawks.
Their roster is a lot better, but, I mean, anything can happen.
They have an adult head coach.
Hawks can pick it up here. I mean, they can get things going. It's their first game they've played together, and this is a
It's still the same exact problems they were having for 4 years now, I think.
But it's different players. I mean, it's still different players coming in. It's not just the same guys that they had last year. A lot of those guys last year are now in the NHL or AHL team.
I think there are some positives and negatives that can be taken away if you just look at, like, the micro of last game and try to, like, think just game to game. Because you look at the power play. The power play looked really good for the Hawks when they were able to keep a sustained offensive possession. And even when it was fives and the Hawks were able to maintain a possession, they looked pretty good. When they were scrambling back on defense, when the Avs had sustained possession, that's when it got kind of iffy. And I think maybe it's a defensive scheme issue.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
If you look at any of the metrics, Corsi, which is the most fundamental hockey stat, that's basically shots for or against. Colorado won that 72%, which is not good. Seth Jones, your best defenseman, had a 22% Corsi, which is really bad. So it's just the other team has the puck way more than they ever do, and that's still something that's been an issue for 4 years.
And the transition offense of Colorado, though, is just the best in the NHL. So
they're the fastest.
It's hard to really like compare that and every, but not with what Joey was saying and everything.
I think tomorrow's game against the Devils is really going to give it's going to be
a
good
idea
gauge. Exactly, because if you can come out and look like a good team against the Devils, then that'll give me some hope, knowing that the Devils are not good. But if you come out and even if they win like 3-2 in a shootout or something, I think we might be in for a long one.
Yeah. Got to see some positives.
So it's a prediction because I thought about this too. You guys hold this over my head all season. 86 points, fifth or sixth in the division, just out of the playoff spot. Print that.
I'll hang by
that all year. Yeah. So 86 points.
Who else would get a wild card spot? They would come out of the Pacific
then?
Probably something like that.
I think they're just going to barely miss the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I know. I think they are going to benefit from not just playing always in the Central.
Yeah, I just don't think they're one of the four best teams in their division.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it, definitely. But I think there's still an opportunity that they can make that last.
They're better than they were last year, but it's still not enough is what I'm saying.
All right.
You know, I think that
Leo could hate on him.
Yeah,
he just doesn't think at all they have a chance.
I think the Hawks could be a 90-point team, just given a couple of the guys they've added. They're going to account for a couple wins. And Jeremy Colleton special, the 1 point loss in overtime.
Yeah.
I think that's really going to come in handy. So I think they could crack in as a low wild card team in the mid to low 90s points wise. I think it's just how things shake up down the season if they're able to stay healthy.
Yeah, it's going to come close, definitely towards the end of the year.
Can't wait to see where this goes.
No, you can. You can wait.
I can wait. If you really want to hear us feel better about ourselves, we're going to talk about the Chicago Bears next. David Moses joined the show. That's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
All right, Jessica. This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy. And now we're joined on the show by David Moses, who's breaking down the big game this week between the Chicago Bears and Green Bay Packers.
Oh, you said the name. It's the team up.
Oh,
noise.
I thought I said something else that we're not allowed to say on the radio for a second.
The big. Now you said the big game. You're good.
I didn't even mean to do it like that. But,
all right. Well, I just don't like saying the P word though. The Green Bay team.
Right. The team up north. Yeah. So where do we start with this? Because it's been.
Should we talk about this season or David?
Yeah,
what do you want?
Let David,
you're a guest on the show right now.
I mean,
for the
really,
second half.
When you're thinking about the season, we're 5 games in week 6. It's honestly better than I expected as a fan.
Agreed.
You know, I didn't expect Justin Fields to start this early. I kind of thought Matt Nagy and company were going to be a little bit stubborn with him. We were probably weren't going to see him until about week 15, week 16. But
and they kind of still were stubborn with him. They kind of had to put him in.
And honestly, well, you know, when you say that, they kind of still are. I, you know, unpopular opinion, I think that the Bears have failed him so far. When you look at it, he's played in all 5 games. He has 51% completion rate, 458 yards, 1 TD, 2 interceptions. And, I mean, those are underwhelming numbers,
yeah.
Especially when you come from Ohio State and you literally have 2 amazing seasons.
Right. Yeah. I was shocked last week when I realized that was his first touchdown pass he had thrown. Like, it feels like.
I know. I was like, what?
Yeah.
It was really shocking to hear and everything. And I think, like, with that, like, Matt Nagy calling plays compared to Bill Lazor, like,
the
one game Bill Lazor called plays, Justin Fields had those long balls down the field, the longest or the most completed down the field since Jay Cutler. And, like, that was just. Something Bears fans needed, and something the Bears fans just needed to see and have happen, because that is just something that doesn't happen. We're so used to the same exact thing with this running game and good defense. It's like, all right, can we throw the ball like every NFL team?
And I mean, we just wrapped up a segment talking about a bad Chicago coach, and we're just going to go into another segment talking about a bad Chicago coach. But
a couple of those.
For a completely different reason. I think Matt Nagy is just – I think when you said stubborn, that was the perfect word to describe – what Justin Fields is going through right now, just because Matt Nagy is so stuck in his ways and he is so fixated on the fact that his play calling and his scheme is going to be the one that's going to work for the Bears. But you have to realize that you have a guy in Justin Fields who is a generational dual threat quarterback, and you have to be able to scheme a game for him, and they're just not doing that. And the Bears are winning. Don't get me wrong. I love the Bears.
Yeah.
And the fact they're winning is a miracle. But I just don't think it's sustainable when you look at the way that Justin Fields is being used.
So what do you think, you know, I know we're looking ahead here, but how long do you think he has, you know, as a Bears coach?
Oh, I think he has for sure this year.
Well,
definitely 100% this whole entire year, no matter what the rest of the record goes. Bears don't fire their coaches middle of the season. And I just want to say Nagy as a play calling coach and decisions on the field, not great. But Nagy as a head coach in the locker room, like, those guys trust him in the locker room and everything, and they have really good relationships with him. We saw in 2018, even a little bit in 2019, he's gone to the playoffs, what, 3 times?
Yeah, and that's the thing I wanted to bring up, the fact that he's made the playoffs 2 out of his 3 full seasons
though,
in the league, but the fact that this team hasn't had a full-scale mutiny. What did they have, a 6-game losing streak last year? And they still didn't turn on him. Akeem Hicks didn't break a chair over his back in the locker room or anything, that they still seemed bought in, the players are still trying on the field. That's got to be worth something, that maybe he's the CEO of the team but just can't be the one calling the plays.
And I mean, when you think about it, Matt Nagy came from Kansas City. I think Matt Nagy is a great coach, but I don't think he's a great play caller. And in Kansas City, I'm pretty sure Andy Reid was calling those plays anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the same situation Matt Nagy's trying to do here with the Bears. He wants to call plays and kind of leave Bill Lazor to just be a silent offensive coordinator. It's just not working for him. It worked in Kansas City. It's not working here.
And he's done, like, a good job with that. He was a big part with drafting Mahomes and everything, developing Mahomes and everything, trying to make sure, groom him into an NFL quarterback. And then before at the Eagles, he kind of did the same thing. And he's always, before he came to the Bears, though, like, he really never called plays at all. So, I mean, he thought he knew what he was doing, but I feel like at the same time, maybe he just isn't, like, I don't know, because NFL coaches, you have to be wired up. He's just not cut up for calling the plays.
And so we're talking about this, that he has this scheme that nobody really knows what it is or what he needs for it. We've seen, because he doesn't change it to the quarterback. It's the same scheme for Mitch, for Foles, for Fields.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have thought these are all quarterbacks he had some say in picking and could find a quarterback that has a skill set for his system. But it seems like, regardless, they're not. So what is he looking for, and why haven't the Bears been able to equip that? That's what I don't get, is that Nobody seems to know what this scheme is that he seems fixated on.
It's like
on.
He doesn't even pass the ball down the field. Like, what type of scheme is
and
that
it's,
at
it's
all?
Just, it's so frustrating, and it's even worse now. Like, when you're watching another game and there's a 3rd and 13 and a team throws a screen pass, the announcers will be like, oh, that's the right of the Matt Nagy playbook. And it just hurts. It hurts because they're right. And there are some – you guys have mentioned Bill Lazor. And when Bill Lazor's calling the plays, the offense looks completely different. It's the same scheme almost or the same playbook, but it's just run so differently.
And opened up.
And it allows the players to succeed. And so I think moving forward, Bill Lazor calling the plays is going to be one of the keys for this team to have success. And that's going to start next week.
Okay, boys. I don't want to keep being Debbie Downers, though. I mean,
you don't want to be like me, is what you're saying.
Well, okay. Well, Leo just admitted it, so yes, I don't want to be like you, Leo. But no, I mean, I feel like Leo or David, you came right into the show and you said that I'm actually kind of surprised how the Bears are doing this year. So let's look at some positives. Like, what do you think the Bears have done well that you were like, wow, I didn't think that was gonna happen. I feel like everyone's gonna say it, like running game.
Yeah, and what surprised me the most is that they can stick in games that maybe they're being outmatched in. Like, they can win those
losses, as much as
I hate saying it, sound like a meatball. Like, they can win these gritty games, they can win these ugly games, they can last four quarters in a game and kind of find those ways to win, which I didn't think they were going to be able to.
And that's always how the Bears have been.
Yeah.
Like, run the ball, gritty games, we're going to win 20-13. Ever since I've been a fan, since I was born, that's how every single Bears game, that's how they win the games. And it stinks, but that's Bear football, baby.
You know, I'm going to be honest. You know, at the beginning of the season, with the new defensive coordinator, Sean Desai, I was not sure about him. But the defense really looks like they're as close to 2018 as they've been in the past few years.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially, you know, with Robert Quinn and Khalil Mack, you know, being able to finally click. They really open up windows and doors for those smaller players like Travis Gibson. What is the middle linebacker that we have that's filling
Ogletree.
In?
Yeah. Ogletree's like the new guy now. Like, Trevathan's coming back. He's, I think, fully back.
Didn't he play last week?
Yeah, he played a little bit. But, I mean, now he's, like, I think fully healthy. But I think Ogletree, I think he's going to be staying in there. I really, like, coming into this year, Alec Ogletree was an excellent pick.
And
the best one they had.
I think the best thing, the best improvement I've seen on the defensive side of the ball is the secondary's ability to wrap up and make open field tackles.
In the first 2 weeks.
After week one.
Yeah, after week one, of course. But because there were some ugly ones week one. But after that, you see guys like in the Raiders game this last week, I swear Duke Shelley had like three or four open field solo tackles. And it just looks, because that's been the big knock on the Bears secondary for years is, oh, well, they don't wrap. And they can't wrap up. They can't bring guys down on their own. But it's really improving, and some of these young guys have kind of proven themselves. They're still getting burned every now and again, but I don't know. That's really promising. So I hope to God that they can hold up this weekend.
So you guys know I'm a big guy that likes to talk things in the trenches and everything.
Okay.
And so the Bears have been using this jumbo package. Alex Bars, 13 plays last game with Alex Bars coming in as the jumbo package tight end. 9 of them were runs. A couple of pass plays with Alex Bars out there. And I think that that's something that the Bears have really gotten into a lot more this past year. And their running game has been really well. Top 10 in every rushing category in the NFL. But there is one struggle with that has been their short down situation. I feel like once the opposing defense knows that it's going to be a run, like a short down situation, and the Bears run offense, they've been struggling with that. And I think that's kind of why Nagy and the offense have been doing this jumbo package, because they've been a little bit iffy on those short downage.
Yeah, at first I did not know how to look at that because I thought that was Nagy saying my offensive line is so bad I need 5 offensive linemen out there.
Yeah.
But it reminded me of 2018 when, I don't know if you guys remember, but Bradley Sowell.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
What a blast from the past.
Against
the
Vikings, he caught a couple touchdowns that year. Yeah. So I think they're trying to do something, you know, similar with that.
What an absolute blast from the past. Wow. I completely forgot about that play.
Yeah. I mean, that was a fun year, no matter what you look at it. But even then, it was the same things that were kind of just frustrating. Like, their offense just wasn't it. And that's just been the same thing pretty much since 2014, when they had one good year on offense.
And still, like we just talked about with Nagy compared to Colleton, it's been the same problems every year, but he keeps getting more rope. But at least his teams, they managed to stick together. They've been finding ways to win still. But what concerns me a little bit, I mean, we could touch on this a little bit, is now with David Montgomery being out for a few weeks, and then his backup is hurt now too, where does the run game go from here? Are you guys believers in Khalil Herbert as running back?
I'm a big Khalil Herbert guy. He's looked incredible. And I mean, David Montgomery, he's going to miss two more weeks maybe. So
two or three,
yeah. So he'll be able to come back. Damian Williams, he's just COVIDed, so he'll be back soon.
Khalil Herbert, he's shifty. He's got a quick first step. He can move around the field.
He's like a little guy, but he can hit a little bit.
He's built.
I like him a lot.
Honestly, this might be a good thing in disguise because this might actually open up the playbook for Justin Fields. We don't have a lot of running backs. They're going to get fatigued. Mm-hmm. Justin Fields is going to be forced to throw the ball or, you know, take it out and run himself. But I don't know how good of an idea that is after seeing his leg hyperextend last week. That was pretty
good. That was scary. Yeah. That was scary.
And, like, with Justin Fields throwing the ball and everything, there's been some players, Cole Kmet, Jimmy Graham, even Damir Bird. That's kind of like, I kind of expected to see a little bit more from him. Marquise Goodwin, he's been all right. He's had a couple decent catches and everything. And even Darnell Mooney's really been the only like receiving threat. I mean, obviously Allen Robinson, he's always going to be a big threat, but really in these first couple of games, you haven't seen much of him compared to what we've seen the past 2 years.
And we've talked about that a little bit, how David said they maybe haven't put Fields in a position to succeed, and it feels like they haven't been able to incorporate other players in the passing game. It feels like it's either they're throwing it to Mooney or they're not going to throw it at all, and that's something they're probably really going to have to change, because Cole Kmet, too, he showed a lot of flashes last year, but then this year it feels like he's just been out of the picture.
Yeah, and watching games, it just seems also that the receivers aren't really getting open, and I'm wondering if it's the play calling with the receivers or just sometimes they can't get separation against some of these guys. Because coming into this year, we all thought, oh, this speed, like everyone in the national media was like, this Bears team, they have speed now and everything. Yeah. And like, oh, Tariq Cohen isn't even back yet. Wait for that. It's like, who even knows if he's coming?
Yeah, right.
But like, it's the speed. I haven't really seen the speed.
I think it's honestly the holes we put ourselves in. Let's say we get a 5 yard gain, and then, you know, we have a penalty offsides that moves us back five. Okay, well, obviously the defense knows you're probably going to have to pass there. I just think our offense is so predictable based in the holes we put ourselves in.
Yeah.
So.
I know. I definitely agree with that. But with this week, it's going to be a tough challenge. We're going up against one of the baddest men, I guess we can say someone likes to call him, and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you can't deny him. He's one of the best, greatest quarterbacks that's ever played the game. It's been tough. All of us have grown up just knowing nothing but pain from this guy, and it's been a struggle. I mean, what do we think we got to do?
Honestly, the defense is not great for Green Bay this year. And they're missing a couple key guys this week. I think that it's really the time to let Justin Fields loose. Like David's been saying the whole time, is give him an opportunity to really shine and do what he's good at, which is airing the ball out, because our defense will be able to hold off the Packers as much as any team can hold off the Packers. But at the end of the day, Aaron Rodgers is going to score points. It's just what he does. So if the Bears can keep up with him, and if Justin Fields can prove that he's that guy, right, and he's the guy who can go deep and find his man, then I think the Bears will have a chance. Because I hope to God, if the Bears beat the Packers, you guys would not see me Monday. I would be in another world.
And I just don't think the Packers are this juggernaut that we've been accustomed to them being in the past few years. I mean, you look at, they got crushed week one by the Saints. They barely beat the Bengals last week. A lot of missed field goals played into that. And then they had the close one against the Niners, who might not be all that either. So I think the Bears, if they could put up points, they could be in this game. That they could try to get into this if it's a shootout. But then it's just, you're going up against Rodgers, and it always seems like he's that guy that can finish things out on the last 2 minutes. And this is going to be the big test for the Bears, is if they can contain him and have Fields match him punch for punch.
Yeah, I think they're going to be able to contain Rodgers, because Packers offensive line right now has not been good at all. It's been one of the worst offensive lines. But what the Bears do have to do is contain Davante Adams, because I just got this feeling, and he always kind of does, because he's arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL. He's going to have a big game, and he's going to be the guy for Green Bay, and they might have to rely also on a little bit of Aaron Jones. But Packers are banged up, and that Bears front seven is—it's been nasty this year.
They're mean. Those are some mean guys.
That's a mean group. You do not want to go up against those guys, especially with the rookie on that offensive line and a couple guys inexperienced.
And what intrigues me most about that front seven is that it really doesn't seem like there's been a game where you've had both Eddie Goldman and Akeem Hicks in at the same time. So if they get that front seven fully healthy, that could be really dangerous.
Yeah, and limited participation from Jakeem Grant. Okay, so I've been trying to find where Akeem Hicks and his participation this week, and he did not participate in practice today. So definitely something that is a little bit worrying. Probably yeah. will not get to be playing on Sunday. And that's Bears haven't had Akeem Hicks, I feel like, in the past couple of games against the Packers, too.
Yeah, but they've got, like Leo was saying, there are so many other guys who have been able to step up. Kyrgios Tonga is one of them.
Really excited to see him.
He is really stepped up. Travis Gibson is another guy. So even with a bunch of dudes down, the Bears just pump out D linemen like no one's business.
Right. You know, Sean Desai is just, you can tell he comes from that Vic Fangio coaching tree. But for this week, I really think the game is going to come down to discipline and playing a complete game from quarter one to quarter four. I think our defense has been playing very well, and they put our offense in great positions to extend these leads. But we don't really I think two out of the three wins we've had this year should have been absolute blowouts.
Yeah.
The one in Cincinnati, the one at home versus Cincinnati, and then this one last week, we should have blew both of those teams out. They were too close, because our offense just hasn't capitalized.
And I want to win like a third quarter. You know, you win the first and second quarter and everything. You win the first half. But in every game almost, in their losses and wins, it's that third quarter comes around, fourth quarter even, and the Bears kind of just go dead. And it's just kind of not exactly completely dead, but compared to what they were doing, it just seems a different switch is flipped on the other team. And it's a little bit worrying, especially as the year's going to go on and if this team has aspirations to do something.
And that's some of our analysis for this game. We won't make our predictions yet because that's coming up next when we take a time to play the pick six. It's coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Sounder means it's time for the Pick 6, our weekly NFL Pick'em segment. Joey, want to refresh our audience on how it is we play the Pick 6 here?
I would love to, Leo. So the Pick 6, we've got six NFL games from the upcoming week. Not seven, you're absolutely right, yes. Joe. We've got six games coming up. We all pick our winners, and then we keep score and see who's doing the best. And right now,
it's a close fight.
We came in to last week, and we're like, okay, the standings are way too close. We have to get some great games. And last week was the week to do it because there were so many really great games that could have gone either way, and we had very different picks. Unfortunately, we all kind of evened out, so it's still very close.
I'm happy with it because I was down below. The standings
are as follows: the guest and Steve Cease, our faculty advisor, tied for last place. Steve fell, and taking Steve's place, tied for first, is Joe Kennedy with me and Leo. We're all sitting at 19 and 11. Guest and Steve are 18 and 12. So even though there's a first and a last, it's still very, very close.
Just one game out, and it was a big week. 5-1 for me last week, so I'm happy.
All right, and let's dive right into it here with our first game. We have the Tampa Bay Bucks at the Philadelphia Eagles. That's the Thursday night game. Joey, we'll start things off with you.
And I think this is going to be probably the easiest game we pick all night. I'm not sold on the Eagles whatsoever, so I hate to do it, but we're going to go Bucks.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Bucks you there, Joey. Yeah. Yeah. Tom Brady's playing some of the best football in his career, and what is he in year 22?
I don't know.
He's like 58 years old. Yeah, he's still doing his thing. I feel like we don't even talk about this. I'm going Bucks, but Eagles are a little sneaky team, so we'll see.
I'm also going the Bucks, as is our faculty advisor, Steve Cease. For our next game, this is the one we just spent talking about at length. It's the Green Bay Packers at the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field Sunday at noon. This will be a good one, guys.
And I don't even have to say who I'm picking. You already know. How about them Bears?
How about them Bears? Okay, David.
I'm going with Justin Fields and the Bears on this one.
Leo and I feel like we're both, we're always so similar with this type of stuff. We're like, oh my God, what do we do? Leo, do you know what you're doing yet? Do you have an idea?
I think so, but do you want me to take out over here, or do you want to go?
All right, I mean, I feel like, are we both going Bears? Because I'm going Bears.
I was going to go Packers.
No!
Yeah.
All right, go Packers.
Yeah, I'm the hater, I guess. You guys go ahead. Call me it. Steve Cease is going the same way here.
Yeah. Oh, that is so upsetting.
I'm sorry, guys.
I feel like he was going to switch it up there. I mean, this is the first week we've seen Leo kind of do this.
You could see it in his eyes. You could see it in his eyes.
He had a little grin on his face. Yeah. He was like, oh, I'm sorry. Not on my watch.
So for the next game, we're going to go with the Los Angeles Chargers at Baltimore Ravens. Another team matchup of two very interesting teams here.
These are two teams that have both looked really good, but... The Ravens just haven't beaten anyone like super convincingly to make me think that they can hang with the Chargers, who I think are the best team in the AFC this year. So I got to ride with Jay Herbo.
You know, I'm going to combat you on that one.
I'm going to go
with Lamar Jackson. I think he's going to have a good week, you know, especially, you know, coming off of that historic performance last week. You know, I think he's going to, you know, continue his hot streak right now.
Okay.
Yeah, and both of these teams, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, two of the best closers in the NFL. They put up like some of the most points in the fourth quarter. Two quarterbacks that definitely have a really bright future. But with that being said, I know Justin Herbert very well. He's a good friend of mine and everything, so I'm going to go be taking the LA Chargers in this game against the Baltimore Ravens.
The Chargers.
I'm also going with the Chargers here. Just, I think they've been able to win a lot more convincingly than Baltimore here, but that is something worth noting about Baltimore is just like with the Bears. They've been able to win games in ugly ways or win when they're not having their best nights. I just think the Chargers will have the advantage here. For next game, we're going to go with the Arizona Cardinals at the Cleveland Browns, the Sunday game at 3:05.
This is the undefeated Cardinals. But I think they're taking the first L of the season this week. I think that the Browns are due to beat somebody good. I think the Cardinals are due to lose. The last 2 weeks, Kyler just hasn't really looked himself. He's a little banged up coming into this week. I picked the Browns last week, and it kind of came back to bite me. So if I pick them again and they lose this week, I will never pick the Cleveland Browns again. So don't let me down, Baker.
You know, I'm feeling a little dangerous today.
Okay.
Might have to go with Cardinals on this.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry, I threw you for a loop there.
All right, I'm going to... Cleveland's in a weird spot. Jadeveon Clowney, Denzel Ward, two of their best defensive players not in. But also the Cardinals, they got a couple guys out on defense too as well. Chandler Jones is not in. Cardinals are 5-0. Cleveland, they got to remind people who they really are. They came in here with a bunch of high hopes coming into this season, trying to make it to the big game and everything. But I think Cardinals are going to keep rolling in this one. I think Kyler Murray is going to keep it going. And I want to switch things up. You know, I feel like Browns at home, it's going to be a really good game in that one.
I also like the Cardinals in this one. I think that that Kyler Murray is going to be able to find Hopkins, Rondale Moore, and a lot of his targets and can just put up a lot of points on this Cleveland defense. And moving into our second and last game, we have the Seattle Seahawks at the Pittsburgh Steelers. This will be an interesting one, the Geno Smith Big Ben game. This could be one where it gets interesting.
I hate that we're picking this game because it's a bad Steelers team against a good Seahawks team that doesn't have Russell Wilson. I have zero idea because the Steelers defense is good and Geno Smith I do not trust. But Big Ben is so bad. He is so washed up. I seriously have no idea. I have no idea who to pick here. Oh,
I could pick for you.
Oh, that didn't work out well last week. Oh, my goodness. And Juju's out for the season. Oh, my God. I have to go Seahawks, but I don't trust him at all.
Okay. I like
that. This is probably the toughest game we have to choose from just because, you know, Russ being out due to injury. And I think, you know, he is the heartbeat of that team. So I think his loss is very beneficial. So I'm going to have to go with the Steelers.
Okay.
I mean, Geno Smith is Geno Smith. He's not going up against a team like TJ Watt in that defense of the Steelers. I think the Steelers, Big Ben maybe isn't the guy he was, but they still have, their O-line is a little bit bad. A couple of young rookies on that team. But I think Najee Harris and those receivers, I think Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, they're going to have a game, Leo. And I think Steelers are going to pull this one out. I think it's still a really solid team. Their defense can do their work. And I got the Steelers in this one.
I look at this one as maybe it's a bad matchup on the surface, but these are two teams with good coaches in Mike Tomlin and Pete Carroll that could find ways to win maybe without their best players. And I just like a lot of the other weapons outside of Big Ben that the Steelers have. You mentioned Najee Harris. I like their defense. I think they could win this one, but it'll be a close one. It'll be a well-played game compared to two teams that are struggling at the quarterback position.
God, you guys are going against me every pick. I'm so scared.
I mean, I am too, because then you're just going to go all the way ahead. I mean, you and Steve seem to have pretty similar picks.
Don't mind
so.
Me and Steve.
Yeah, you guys are the same exact
don't
stuff.
Mind us taking the lead.
Besides the Bear Packer game, though.
Well, of course, because the Bears are going to rout him, but Steve would never admit that.
Well, we got an interesting game to finish things off.
Yeah, let's get into that, Joe. The Monday night game, the Buffalo Bills at the Tennessee Titans. This will be the one we finish the week off on, so where do we want to start, guys?
I'm going to start with the Buffalo Bills. That's good. That's a pretty easy pick for me. The Titans lost to the Jets, and that's basically all I got to say about them.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the MVP frontrunner, Josh Allen, and the Bills.
I mean, yeah, Buffalo Bills coming in this one. They did lose to that Steelers team, though, in week one and everything. So, I mean, you got to watch out for that.
Yeah, week one.
But, I mean, yeah, the Titans just aren't where they really were trying to be this year. And Julio Jones, A.J. Brown been outed a little bit. Offense has been inconsistent and everything. But I think Browns are going to be able to get this one.
I'm also going to go with the Bills here. Josh Allen's coming off.
I say Browns.
Yeah, okay. I had to pause for a second. I was like, wait a second. I
was reading.
No, you're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably the easiest game we've picked.
Yeah, Josh Allen coming off his MVP performance. It's a clean sweep. All of us are picking the Bills here. And that's all the time we have on this show today. So we'd like to thank David Moses for coming on. It's the homecoming spectacular show. We talked about Redbird football, the Chicago Blackhawks, Chicago Bears, pick six, everything in between. We have three great broadcasts coming up on WZND this weekend. Football or volleyball tomorrow night, football on Saturday morning, and then volleyball on Saturday evening. So it's going to be a great weekend here. Can't wait to experience a normal homecoming.
And
again.
Hey, if you're tailgating on Saturday and you're like, man, I still want to experience the game, tune into 103.3. We got a great call. Mr. Leo Stoddaher himself.
Yeah, and you can tune in from anywhere, you know, even on your mobile device. So make sure to tune in.
WZND.com.
Anywhere you can.
You guys are really just doing the most to sell this here, and it'll be a great
weekend,
though.
Come on.
As the Redbirds are looking to defeat the Bison, send the homecoming crowd home happily, as that one will go off at 1:50 on Saturday. And that's all we have here for the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
To hear this and other past episodes of the Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.